Alrighty, good morning. It's 9:14. Says here that she's a mom and a grandmother and a poet and a mediator and an author and a practicing lawyer for 22 years. She's also the author of the best-selling Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World. Did I say that right before? She is Janet Smith Warfield. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm tremendous. Thanks for asking. Did I use the right
word? I'm glad to hear you're tremendous.
Yeah. Is that the right word?
That's a terrific word to use because it's very positive.
I'm grateful right now, too. Because,
oh, good. That's another wonderful word.
Well, we were having some struggles with our phones this morning. There's something wrong with the system in the area, and we're not able to make long-distance calls, but we were able to connect on some cell phones. So I'm grateful for cell phones, and I'm grateful that you called me back.
Well, I try to be accountable.
This is a very interesting discussion for me, the topic of changing your words and changing your world, because I think it's something that I've been interested in for a long time. It's just the way, particularly, and you can correct me if it's not this kind of an issue with other cultures, but in English.
I think it's true in every culture because words are always context specific. They always relate to a particular experience. And because all of our experiences are a little bit different, we understand words differently. And an immediate example that comes to mind would be if I talk about the beach, I could be talking about Atlantic City, New Jersey, mm-hmm. or I could be talking about Waikiki. They are very different experiences. And if I'm talking about Atlantic City and you're thinking Waikiki, you're not really going to completely get what I say.
Very true. I'm getting set to take a trip south in a little bit, and I've been reading a book, and I went and forgot what it's called, but it talks about different cultures, too, and how we experience words in different ways in different cultures. And this particular lady is dividing it up into cold and warm cultures. And talk about how the warm cultures are a little more relational while cold cultures are a little more factual.
I think that's absolutely true. You may or may not know, I live in Panama right now, which I guess would be a warm culture. Mm-hmm. And what seems to me to be just very factual and direct sometimes offends Panamanians. And what they say to me, which sounds lovely and warm and relationship connected, often also seems not fully accountable.
Yeah, well, yeah. The one thing that I'd read was that if you were to say to a warm culture person that you need a ride somewhere, mm-hmm. and they might say something like, "Oh, gosh, you know what? The car seats 5." And we have 6 people, but I might be able to squeeze you in, but I'll let you know, okay? Whereas a cold culture person would just say, no, I'm sorry, we're full.
And that's very true. I think in Panama, at least, people are very polite. They simply do not say nasty things to one another, as Americans sometimes do, or Canadians.
And yet we're a real mountain.
They say what they think you want to hear, maybe
yeah.
not what they feel.
Yeah, I think there's some generalizations, too, because we're a real melting pot in Canada. I mean, I think sometimes we get a reputation of being a little too polite.
Really?
Well, sometimes we do, yeah. And sometimes I find Canadians not as extroverted, generally speaking, as a lot of other cultures.
Well, I agree with that. I think that's true, and I think it's also true of the American culture. When you compare both of those to, for example, the Panamanian culture, where strangers talk to strangers on the street all the time. They connect eye to eye. They say good morning. They're very polite and respectful.
I like that.
I do, too.
Yeah, I bet.
It's one of the beautiful things about Panamanian culture.
You say you had kind of a life-changing experience, what, 35 years ago?
Yes.
A mundane encounter, you thought, at the time, maybe? But it left you transformed.
What transformed was not the external world, which, if we look at the external world, it's always in chaos or frequently in chaos. So the transformation was not in the external world. the transformation was in the way I was looking at the external world. It was a consciousness shift, and the best analogy I can give for it is to use optical illusions. You may or may not be familiar with the optical illusion of the old hag and the young lady. Do you know that one?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, the lines on the paper are fixed and final. They don't change, but our minds take those lines and organize them in a particular way so that we either see the old hag or we see the young woman. And depending on what we see, we apply different words to what we see. We have different emotions in connection with what we see, and we may take different actions in connection with what we see. Our real world is exactly the same way. We have all this sensory data going on around us, and we shape it into words. There are word patterns that we impose on this sensory data, and we all do it differently, which is why communication is often so difficult.
So, Janet, do you think that it's possible to come up with a standard form of communication that would be adequate, or is it going to require some kind of a shift in the way we think?
I think it requires a choice in the way we think, and we do have choices as to the words we can use and the emotions we want to feel. For example, I like to feel good. I like to feel harmonious.
Maybe there may be
some people out there that don't, but I like to do that. So I've learned that there are certain ways I need to use words to bring that kind of harmony into my life. For example, I can ask questions, I can tell stories, I can use first person singular, just talk about what's going on in me. It's very dangerous, I think, if you're trying to create a harmonious relationship, to use third-person language or second-person language, talking about what the other person is doing or thinking or saying or ought to do. It's always dangerous. You create separation and conflict by doing that.
You talk about using words, Janet. I'm not sure if I have as much, I mean, I do have trouble using words, but I'm not sure if I have more trouble using words or more trouble hearing words.
Both. I would say, I'm not talking about you. I am talking about me and probably every person on this planet. Some of us are aware that there's a challenge with words. Others of us are not aware of the challenge. If you're aware, then when you're listening to another person, there's an energy that's behind the words, I think, which is what I tune into. I tune into the energy behind the words, which could be anger, love, compassion, fear. And then I also tune into the word patterns. For example, if someone is very angry with me and screaming at me and calling me names, that is not saying anything about me. That is saying a huge amount about that other person and the way they think and the way they structure their experience.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned this before. I was a member of an online community for pastors one time several years ago, ministers. And I signed up for it because I was involved with a lot of worship leading, and it was disturbing to me to see that in some cases these pastors, it was a place where it's like a bulletin board post. You post a message and then somebody posts a message after you, and it just continues on a topic. And It was amazing to me that some of these guys would get into these really vicious fights with really vicious words, and it seemed like the written word. Meanwhile, I'm looking at it and going, I cannot believe you two are fighting over this. You're both basically saying the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
I think if you would listen or actually take the words to heart, you would find that you're agreeing with each other.
Exactly, and it's not about what the other person is doing. It's about what each of us is doing and the choices each of us is making in relation to words. One of the huge challenges I had in writing this book, and one reason it took me so long, was because I didn't want to use words in an authoritarian way, because this is not about following doctrines. This is about individual freedom and choice. And it would have been very easy for me to say, well, you ought to be kind, you ought to be respectful. But that puts the words in an authoritarian structure, which is not what this is about. How do you free someone by telling them what to do? You don't. You give them choices.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think what most people will find is when they do all the things that all the religions tell them to do, it actually benefits them. They are, in many cases, very self-serving actions, so that you're benefiting both the other person and yourself, and you're creating a win-win situation.
Is there a role for emotional maturity in all of this?
Ooh, that's a loaded term. Emotional maturity.
Let me confess to you, there are times when my wife will say something to me and I'll get my knickers in a knot and she's looking at me like, what's your problem? I didn't mean anything by that. I'm just trying to tell you something.
There's a big difference between the intention of words and the effect of words. And I think what you just talked about is a perfect example of that. Your wife's intentions were good, but the effect that her words had on you was not good. And if you can separate out those two aspects of words, it's very useful. It's helpful. Words are just such very tricky things to work with. And that's why I look for the patterns and also the emotion behind the words. That's so important. And just getting back to this whole issue of emotion, emotion is closely tied in to our own self-talk and our own perceptions of what's going on around us. And we can shift that. We can shift it. An example I can think of, maybe I have an acquaintance, and all I can think to say about my acquaintance is, she's so catty, she gossips about everybody. Mm. That's not a particularly useful observation. I may want to note it. But when I say things like that, I don't feel very warm toward this acquaintance. If I stop and think about the time she brought me homemade soup when I was sick, then all of a sudden my emotions change to warmth, understanding, compassion, perhaps forgiveness for some of the things she does that I don't particularly like.
I hear you. In the book, do you talk about fear, releasing fear?
Ooh, yeah.
And how that can affect all of this?
I think every single person on this planet has struggles with fear. And fear is nothing but focusing on one of two things, either focusing into the future, what if this happens, what if that happens, what if he doesn't like what I'm going to do, or it is focusing on other people and what they will do. You give your power away when you focus either in the future or on what other people may do. You take your power back when you simply bring your mind back to the present moment, which is usually very safe, secure, and sound.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask yourself, what can I do with this present moment? What is my next step? And it just changes the whole feeling surrounded with fear. The other thing, and let me see, how can I put this? I have intellectually always been an agnostic, but from the heart, I'm a believer, and I'm a believer because I need to be. It's a matter of survival for me, I think, to believe there is some energy or power much greater than each one of us individually. When I have that faith and I am willing to just say, please lead me, please give me direction, suddenly the fear goes. It's as if I have a partner. Now, you know, does this higher energy really exist? Again, we're talking about external stuff, and that's not what this is about. This is about bringing oneself into mastery, really, bringing emotions, actions, words, perceptions, everything, mastering the whole kit and caboodle that all interrelate to one another. It's very hard to talk about this stuff.
It is, and yet that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Finding the words.
Well, we're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Consider.
I mean, words are pointers. Words are not answers, but they often help catalyze answers. There are situations I've been in which have been such ugly relationships that I have simply had to move myself out of them because it's very draining for me to stay in them. So that is really self-care and self-respect and self-love, to be able to simply detach from someone else's chaos. It's very context-specific. There are some general rules you can follow, but it depends on the particular situation. It depends on what's going on within me at a particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm tired, I don't deal with things as well as when I'm rested.
Well, boy, do I hear that. My wife, if she's listening at home, is going, boy, is that ever him? <'Cause> it's true. I'm so the same. If I'm tired, I just don't think right.
Well, I don't either, but I need to notice that about myself and realize that it's time for me to go to bed and not try to do more work.
Yeah, I can think of a few people in my life probably wish I'd go to bed more than. The book is called Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World, and the author, Janet Warfield Smith, is with us, getting a lot of praise from some pretty neat people, including Bob Proctor, who's one of the teachers of The Secret, right?
That's right.
That must have felt good.
That felt wonderful, and I'm getting a lot of really positive feedback on this book, which just makes me feel very grateful and actually humble. I think it is doing a lot of what I wanted it to do, which is just catalyze perception shifts and
right.
consciousness shifts.
I think that's something that people want in their own lives and in their own sort of minds and hearts, is they want to change the way they think a little bit and change their attitude and their behavior.
Well, when they realize that it benefits them to do
yeah.
it, it's a very self-serving action. It makes it easy to do. It's not because somebody else is telling them they ought to do it. It's because this is beneficial not only to each individual on this planet, but to the entire planet.
It's kind of a pay-it-forward thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's infective. I mean, once you start, you just want to keep doing it.
Well, exactly. When you see the results that come back to nourish you, it's wonderful. It's exciting.
Do you have a website, Janet?
Yes. WordSculptures.com. That's WORD. SCULPTURES.com.
Okay.
And actually, I have a special offer for radio listeners. If
Lovely.
You would like to hear that. If you go on to wordsculptures.com/radio, there is a special offer on my book for people who have heard about it through radio interviews. Everyone who buys through that particular link gets a free copy of my tips booklet, which is a 101 Paths to Peace, Power, and Prosperity. And for anyone who wants to buy both a book for themselves and a book for someone they truly care about, there's a 25% discount on the second book.
Lovely. WordSculptures.com. That address, by the way, as always, will be on the am920.ca website. Folks, if you got that bookmarked, Phil and Scotty's show notes page, and we'll get that up for you so you can link to Janet Warfield Smith. And maybe, hopefully, in the future, keep your cool when the you know what hits the fan. Right, Janet?
Exactly. You've got it.
Great chat.
Stop for a minute and make a choice.
Absolutely. Pleasure chatting with you today.
I've enjoyed it, Phil. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Janet.
Bye.